The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Welcome back to the Mirror Football Podcast with me, Steve Anglesey. In a week when Man United sent a turkey to Turkey by shipping Bebe to Beşiktaş and Arsenal released Tom Cruise, well, risky business, but he was never going to be a top gunner, we'll be hearing from Chelsea legend Frank Leboeuf about his budding career as an actor. We'll be talking to our Midlands correspondent James Nursey in Birmingham to talk flaming torches and pitchforks outside Villa Park for the arrival of Alex McLeish. But first, I'm joined in our palatial Canary Wharf studios by Tom Hopkinson of The People. That's the Sunday News People, not just The People in general, to talk about the latest transfer news. Tom, let's start with Manchester United. The good news, obviously, is they've dumped Bebe. The better news, I think, for United fans is probably they've signed Phil Jones from Blackburn, and they look like doing the Ashley Young deal next week when he's back from his holidays. What do you think of that, Tom? What do you think of those two deals?
Two very interesting signings, aren't they? I mean, Ashley Young has been bubbling away since January. We first knew that United were tracking him by then. I think they put an offer in for him back in January as well. So obviously, someone that Fergie has been keeping an eye on. Great news for United. I think Ashley Young, get him in amongst the United players, you know, and watch him progress at Champions League level. I think it will be good for England as well that he's now playing at that level of football. And Phil Jones, I mean, it's interesting to watch him at the heart of the England under-21s defence in the last couple of games against Spain and then against the Ukraine. Played very well.
Yeah, he came out with it with some credit,
didn't he? He's about the only one who's had any credit, hasn't he? So, yeah, I think good signings for United. And like you say, Bebe gone. I don't think anyone will be too disappointed to see the back of a man they scouted by video.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, and one of the few bad signings of the really bad signings of the Alex Ferguson era. I know we could all bring up Massimo Taibbi and these people, but when you look at it, he's probably made 10 bad signings in 25 years, right? Which is
that's not the worst record.
It's pretty good, and you know, even the disaster of Bebe at $7.5 million is kind of counteracted by the fact that they bring in Chicharito for $10 million that season, and all talk of Bebe just disappeared, didn't it? Do they stop now with these two, or do you think, I mean, Luka Modric is obviously on the radar. We know Chelsea have made an offer for him, which has been rejected, but likely to go back. Is Luka Modric going to be on their radar still?
It's really interesting to look at the targets United are going for this year. I mean, we obviously know that Giggsy's coming to the end of his career. He'll probably have another year left.
His football career, clearly.
Absolutely. Scholesy finished as well. But, you know, did you think they'd go for three or four midfielders? I mean, you know, Ashley Young will probably play out on the left-hand side of midfield. They're looking to bring in several. Sanchez from Udinese as well. It could be a very interesting signing, whether he's playing on the wing or in that second striker role. But, you know, when you've got Wayne Rooney there, do you need him? So,
yeah.
Interesting way that Fergie's going with this.
Modric would make some kind of sense in that what they need is that they, obviously, with Scholes going and the fact that what happened at Wembley and you know, throughout the season, United's central midfield was not great, was it? It was probably the weakest area of their team. But they, you know, Ashley Young, is Ashley Young bad news? Is it bad news for? Is it bad news for Nani? Will Nani drop out now, or will they try and ship off Nani?
Well, there's a big suggestion that Nani could end up at Juventus, isn't there? Juventus definitely interested in Nani, and they've been tracking Antonio Valencia as well. I think, despite the fact Nani was voted Player of the Year at Old Trafford last year, I think he's probably the more likely to be the casualty there. You're not going to let Park go, are you? I mean, he's had a great couple of seasons, always gets the nod in the big games. But I think Ashley Young will be an interesting signing for United. And Modric, it's one to watch, isn't it? I mean, Chelsea in for him, Manchester City in for him as well. Chelsea have made a £22 million bid. We know that. It's been rejected. But that drives the price up when those three clubs are in. And you know, Daniel Levy, very astute businessman, and if he can make a signing for £16 million and flog him for 30 odd million a few years down the line, then more cracking business from him.
Yeah, it's absolutely cracking business. I mean, Sanchez is the one who sort of excites me. I'll have to sort of preface this by saying that I don't watch much Italian football. I've only seen this guy on YouTube and in clips on the internet. And the last guy that came from Italian football who I got really excited about having watched him that way was Alexander Kolarov, who ended up being not that great, didn't have the pace for it. Sanchez looks really tricksy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But do United need a right winger as well? Bought a left winger? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, this is the way United have been playing for the last, you know, however long. I mean, that's the way they play football. It's free flowing, it's attacking, they play with flair. And Sanchez appears to tick all the boxes with that. You know, we know Barcelona are interested in him as well. We know that the other usual suspects have been tracking him. And, you know, I mean, he had a great World Cup, wasn't he? I think that's where he came to everyone's attention, or he grabbed everyone's attention at the World Cup for Chile. And he's, you know, it's just one of those signings that when you see every big club is after someone, it's not like Bebe where there's one club come out of the blue. When every big club is after a player, you've got to say that there's some talent there.
He does look a bit special, and I think the great thing for United fans is that finally it looks like the Cristiano Ronaldo money is going to be spent, and that, you know, that's got to be a good thing, because let's be honest, they were the champions, they were better than everybody else in the long run. They weren't the greatest Fergie team ever by a long way, and, you know, and they were considerably behind Barcelona. So I think it's a great thing for Manchester United fans. A great thing for Arsenal fans as well is the fact that, you know, they actually look like they're going to spend some money on somebody we've heard of. Gervinho, who obviously plays for Lille, is a big sort of surging striker. Is that what Arsenal need?
I think that's what Arsenal thought they'd got in Nicholas Bentner, you know, the big man up front, the target man. And he's never quite delivered, Bentner. I mean, we all know how confident he is. He thinks he's the best player on the planet, but it looks as though he's going to go. And, you know, we talk, the only problem Arsenal have got is we talk about this £35 million war chest that they've got. Now, how far does £35 million actually go these days? If they're paying £12 million for Gervinho, they're probably going to offer him 3-, 4-, 5-year deal, and that money has got to spread over the terms of his contract as well, in terms of wages. So, you know, is a centre forward what they desperately needed? Robin van Persie, you hope, will be fit for the whole season. I would have been more inclined, if I was Arsene Wenger, to shore up the defence first. You know, he's made the move for Chris Samba, he's made a move for Gary Cahill, he's got Thomas Vermaelen coming back, which in itself will be like a new signing. But you know, I think the one thing that you can say about Gervinho's signing is that it's a step in the right direction, and Arsenal fans are at least seeing that the club are going to go out and spend some money.
Yeah, and I mean, he can play out wide as well, which I guess he'll have to, in that kind of fluid attack, he's going to have to do that anyway. But you can't really count on a full season from Van Persie, can you? Can't count on anything from Bentner, and I just wonder whether, I mean, and then as Arsenal fans will always say, well, we should move Walcott inside and maybe they can, you know, at least it's something exciting for Arsenal. Something exciting for West Ham is Kevin Nolan, right? Mm. That's a great signing, isn't it?
Fantastic signing, yeah. And I think what's great about the signing of Kevin Nolan, it shows that the board are willing to back Sam Allardyce. I mean, it's got the hallmarks of a Sam Allardyce signing rather than maybe advisors to the board, which they would seem to be making the signings under or for Avram Grant. And also, interestingly, the board, as in Sullivan and Gold, have put this money in. It's an unsecured loan, so they've given it to the club. It's not coming from the parachute payment money. They have made the money available for Sam, and it shows complete faith. And you know, he just seems to be chasing one or two players. DJ Campbell would be a good signing if they could get him in as well. You know, maybe get rid of the likes of Abinner and who we know he's gone back to Inter Milan, and Demba Ba as well. You know, and get players in who've done it in the Championship. Mm. You know, I mean, Kevin Nolan's been a fantastic figure in resurrecting Newcastle, and I know Newcastle fans will be absolutely gutted to see the back of him, because it's not just his presence on the field, it's his presence in the dressing room as well, which will be massive for West Ham.
And of course, Allardyce will be gutted at taking Nolan from Mike Ashley. That will play on his mind heavily, won't it? Going out of West Ham, obviously, is Scotty Parker, and now we're into the sort of the two big sagas, aren't we? The summer is probably Scotty Parker, and again, the big saga of last summer was Fabregas. We hear that Tottenham have been put off slightly by West Ham quoting them £10 million. Do you see him only going to Tottenham? Could Arsenal get back in for him?
I think there's a lot of people at Arsenal would love to see him there, whether Arsene Wenger, which is obviously the key man, remains to be seen. I mean, the understanding I have of the Park situation is that Liverpool, Aston Villa and Spurs are the three clubs who made the running for him early on. Now, the problem Spurs have got is that they do have this very strict wage structure, which doesn't at the moment go above £70,000 a week. Whether Scott Parker would be willing to drop down, I'm led to believe that would be a drop for him. You know, at this stage of his career, coming to the twilight years, he's got to make the money for the family at this stage, you know. Remains to be seen. I think Harry would love him, but Daniel Levy doesn't always give Harry what he wants. You know, they'll be, he'd seriously have to justify it. And that's probably where the Modric deal, you know, Harry might just be able to say, okay, let Modric go, and we've made so much money on that deal that maybe we can just finance a little bit more for Scott Parker. But you know, if you're Scott Parker, are you looking for Europa League football, or are you looking for Champions League football that Arsenal could give you? You know, we're talking Liverpool and Villa though as well, and you know, I'd say he's probably more inclined to go to Spurs. I'm told he wants to stay in London as well, which obviously plays into Spurs' hands.
That plays right into their hands.
We want to keep an eye on.
And obviously, Fabregas, we've got to discuss it in Madrid this week. Very interesting and illuminating press conference at which he sort of implied that, you know, he called Barcelona the best club in the world, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because they clearly are the best club in the world. But also said that he wouldn't ask Arsenal for a transfer, said he was happy at Arsenal, but that things happened in football. Will they sell him? Is he going?
They'll sell him for the right price. I mean, if you know, if somebody comes in and offers silly money, then, you know, we all know that Arsenal are a couple of players short, and maybe that can be the difference. I think the interesting thing about the Fabregas situation is that a lot of clubs, your likes of Carlos Tevez, you know, when he told Manchester City he wanted to go, all right, they got him to stay until the end of the season, but that's now reared its head. When Ronaldo wanted to go, he gave United another season, but obviously, ultimately, the player power came in.
Yeah, what, Thierry Henry, of course, previous with Arsenal.
Of course, yeah. But this, the slight difference here is that Wenger does seem to have had quite a lot of, you know, say in keeping hold of Fabregas. He's already made him stay for two extra years. And you know, I don't think there's any question that Fabregas loves Arsenal. You know, he knows what the club's done for him. He's loved living in London. Like you say, the best club in the world comes knocking for you. Can he reject it? Personally, he can't reject it. Professionally, would Arsenal turn the offer down? I don't know. I think this year is a very much a transitionary summer for Arsenal, and maybe Wenger will just think, you know, we've got to let him or Nasri go, one or the other, get the money in, spend it elsewhere.
Who would you, I mean, if it was down to a choice of those two, who would you get rid of, you personally?
Personally, I would rather get rid of Nasri, but if I was Wenger and I was looking at him, I mean, you've got Jack Wilshere emerging in the centre. You know, do you build the team around Jack? You know, we know that Cesc is determined to leave, whereas Nasri seems as though he just wants more money. Whether he goes to United or whether he stays at Arsenal, you know, it does seem to be that if Arsenal give him a significant pay rise, that he will stay. I'm not saying that's a great attitude, although it is the attitude of every modern day footballer, just about. But I would be tempted to probably let Fabregas go and let Wilshere come through.
And as you say, I mean, Wilshere. I've spoken to Wilshere. Wilshere wants to play in that Fabregas role, doesn't he?
You know. I thought Alex Song didn't have a bad season last year either, just behind him. You know, I mean,
correct,
people who saw Arsenal week in, week out, you know, I saw them fairly regularly, but not every week. They may disagree with that, but you know, I just think they've got some very good players. They're just two players shy of a good side, and you know, and like we say, if they can maximise the money from Barcelona, £40-50 million, then that buys you two very, very good players on top of the £35 million that they've got already.
Yeah, and may even get in Thiago, I think, as part of the deal, who is a really exciting prospect in the sort of Barcelona youth team, although he has played a significant number of first team games last season. Okay, the other big news of the week is Alex McLeish looking likely to join Aston Villa as manager again, as we record this on Thursday afternoon. Everyone telling us that's going to get done in the next 24 hours, hopefully when the sort of massed ranks outside Villa Park have all gone home to bed. In a moment we're going to hear from our Midlands correspondent James Nursey, but I mean, first of all, Tom, your thoughts on, I mean, relegated twice in 3 years, but a great manager, recommended by Alex Ferguson. Your thoughts on Alex McLeish?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anyone who's had any dealings with Alex McLeish, you know, will tell you he's a very, very strong individual. He'll certainly be able to cope with the job at Villa Park. And look, there were 600 fans, we're led to believe, outside Villa Park yesterday. If 600 fans are reflective of the 40,000 who go to watch Villa, then okay, maybe Randy Lerner needs to take a bit of stock. But you know, the problem he's got, he listened to the fans over Steve McLaren, which I think was probably a mistake. He then went for a very, very different manager in terms of Roberto Martinez. He then was rejected by him and went for a very different manager again in terms of McLeish. Now, what strikes me as being odd about the whole situation is that they've had 2 months now since Gerard Houllier took ill to figure out which direction, yes, if Houllier didn't return, they wanted to take the club. So, look, we know tapping up is against the Premier League rules, but we all know it goes on, and we all know it goes on in every walk of life. How they haven't had a manager lined up and ready to go is just staggering for me, and I just can't quite get my head around how that's happened. But I think the fact is, you know, they've made the decision. They went out of the frying pan with McLaren, into the fire with McLeish. And, you know, if he gets 6 or 7 wins in the first 3-4 months of the Premier League season, Villa fans are going to forgive him for what he did down the road.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And but it's not a happy ship, is it, being an Aston Villa fan? You know, apart from they even got sick of Martin O'Neill, didn't they? Towards the
end,
they were not even towards the end.
I mean, you know, I was there a couple of times, and the fans were booing him. And you know, what would those fans now give for the league positions that they had when Martin O'Neill was in charge? But you know, I'd be worried. I mean, the signing of Darren Bent and the outlay on Darren Bent was very positive back in January, but of course Darren Bent went to Aston Villa to play alongside players such as Stuart Downing and Ashley Young. Now, we know Downing is done to Manchester United. Downing appears to be on his way to Liverpool, and if he's not, then he's clearly, yes, something afoot behind the scenes with where he does go. So yeah, I mean, it's a big job. Whoever to, well, I mean, we're told that McLeish is pretty much wrapped up for the job as well. It's a big job for Alex McLeish, and you know, they're going to have to give him some funds to kick on.
Okay, so we'll go straight over then to the war-torn streets of Birmingham. Come in your flak jacket, James Nursey. Tell us what the atmosphere is like among Villa fans and Birmingham fans.
Well, as a resident of the Second City, I can't understate how everyone is talking about this. Some Villa fans are very angry, undoubtedly. Some are baffled. And some are slowly coming to terms with the fact that McLeish is going to be their new manager, and realise that if they want the club to do well, they'll have to support him. So there's a real variety of opinions out there, but undoubtedly everyone is talking about it.
I mean, you obviously know Alex McLeish, having been our Midlands correspondent for some time now. How much responsibility has he got to take for those two relegations he's had with Birmingham inside 3 years, and how much of it is down to the Carson Young team, and then before that the Brady and Gold and Golden Sullivan team?
That's a good point, Steve, and I do think there's some mitigating circumstances. It shouldn't just be read as two relegations for McLeish. I mean, the first team he inherited under Bruce in November 07, I think most people confess it was a virtually a doomed side. He brought in a couple of loan signings such as Mauro Zarate, who did their best to try and inspire the team to safety. But ultimately, that team was probably destined to go down. And the stats actually after McLeish came in were quite favourable. I think they were picking up more than a point a game, and if they'd done that over the course of the season, they probably would have stayed up that season. As for the campaign that's just finished, Brum can feel very hard done by. I mean, they've won the Carling Cup, they got to the FA Cup quarterfinals, both around January, February time. It was a monumental effort from their small squad, but they paid the price because they were ravaged by injuries for the rest of the season. Zigic, who'd become a key player, never started a league game again. And unfortunately, all those things conspired to send the team down. But I can understand why McLeish probably feels that he's not entirely responsible for both of those relegations.
Last season Birmingham weren't the easiest on the eye to watch, and haven't been really for a couple of years. What kind of football do you think Alex McLeish would like to play at Villa Park? Because it strikes me that, first of all, they, you know, Gerard Houllier appointment seemed to indicate that things might be a bit more stylish than they were under Martin O'Neill. Then they went for, they appeared to be going for Mark Hughes, who's quite pragmatic. Little detour with Steve McLaren, who's known to be pragmatic, could mix it up a bit. And then Roberto Martinez, who is the kind of the arch stylist of the Premier League, you know. So I mean, what's their brief there? And do Villa really know what they want?
Well, let's not kid ourselves. I don't think McLeish is the first choice for this job. But he's the person who wants it the most, who's got the best CV. So that's why they've gone for him. I would think his football tactics and the game he plays would not be the main reason they've gone for McLeish. I think they're attracted more by the fact that he's got experience in Europe. He has a good eye for picking a player, and Villa can get a bit more value for money in the transfer market than they have done. Because you're right, he hasn't exactly played fantastic football at Birmingham. That's an understatement. But he will tell you, you can only be as good and play as expensive a game as the players you're allowed to bring in. And he's had to trawl the bargain basement with Blues. He will inherit some much more technically gifted players at Villa, and it will give him more of a chance to change, get rid of this stigma he has for sort of boring, unattractive teams. And I should add, there were times last season where the team, when they were confident and when the pressure was off, they did actually play some quite good football. People like Barry Ferguson, he was very solid in front of the defence, split up the opposition play, gave it to more creative players like Seb Larsson, Craig Gardner, Hleb when he could be bothered or was fit. And, you know, they did at times play some decent stuff.
What's McLeish like as a bloke? I mean, I know he's a big music fan, and I think he was actually spotted, I think, by some of our team a Bruce Springsteen gig. I think it was last summer. Was it last summer when Bruce played his interminable gigs in Hyde Park?
He went to Roxy Music, didn't he?
McLeish? He was at Roxy Music. That's right. Yeah. What's he like as a guy?
I got to say, he's a good bloke. I mean, being a tabloid journalist, you inevitably rub a few managers up the wrong way.
Surely not you, James.
With a few, largely down to headlines, I hasten to add. But I do think, honestly, he's a good bloke. The players at Birmingham liked him. He was straightforward and honest, and he'd tell them why they weren't in the team, generally. He's approachable. He's approachable. He doesn't have a massive ego. And I would think he'd be a good person to employ because he's hardworking, conscientious, and a good person to work for because he's fairly enthusiastic and dedicated.
Do you have any inside knowledge on, I mean, when Mark Hughes resigned from Fulham, I think we all assumed that he would be shipping up in claret and blue the next day the next month, certainly, when his gardening leave period ended. Have you any knowledge on why they didn't go for Mark Hughes?
Well, I do have a bit of knowledge. My information is that it actually dates back to last summer, because at the risk of going into too much detail, before Martin Neal actually quit, the board were well aware that parting might be on the cards with O'Neill, and they had Hughes lined up to replace him. There was even a story in the Mirror we did about O'Neill name-checking Hughes in what turned out to be his end-of-season farewell speech that year. And they had him lined up to come in, and of course he then went and took the Fulham job. He wasn't patient enough, so that when Villa did actually need a manager, they had to go back to square one. And I think there has been a bit of bad blood between Villa and the Hughes camp over that, so that when the vacancy came up this time around, whilst Hughes clearly thought he had a chance, the reality was somewhat different.
Now, we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, we'll be going up Thursday night. Are we likely to see the, with your crystal ball here, are we likely to see these kind of the protests that we saw outside Villa Park last night? Is that likely to happen, you know, when he ships up there, when he's named, when he's unveiled and holds up the Villa shirt? And, you know, are Birmingham fans as angry about this as Aston Villa fans are?
No, I don't think the Birmingham fans are as angry. They're hopefully going to get some considerable compensation for their man, and many have felt that McLeish had probably taken the team as far as he could and that they're after some fresh direction. Certainly, I think the owners feel that. As for the reception you'll get at Villa Park, I think once he's appointed, which in all likelihood will probably be Friday, there will be the odd punter, the odd passionate Villa fan who's so outraged about this, they probably go down the ground and make some sort of minor nuisance and noise of themselves. But I think the majority of people, once he is named boss, will get over it slowly and come to terms with the fact they really have to support their man if their team is to have a decent season next year.
And just a word for Birmingham before we go. I mean, we hear stuff about their finances. Obviously, this is come as a bit of a shock to them. Maybe not so much of a shock, but which way do they go now?
Well, Carson Young's finally got a chance to bring in his own manager. I think that was one of the things that always counted against McLeish under the new regime, if you like. He wasn't their appointment. So I think they'll relish the opportunity have been able to bring in their own man. I know they've spoken to Chris Hughton's people. I think he's a very strong candidate for the job. He's topped a local poll in the newspaper in the city about who supporters want to take over from McLeish. And I think Young will be after primarily a coach. I mean, everyone knows, and as McLeish has made clear, Carson Young likes to have an opinion on players that are brought into the club. And I think the idea of a coach who can work alongside the owners and have a more open relationship and dialogue on signings and things, I can see that working. And someone like Hughton, I think, would go along with that. And he certainly, I know for sure, wants the job and is very keen on it.
Good. And I would like to see him in one of those tremendous gorilla hair jackets that Carson Young has got as well.
I remember, I think your 3PM column put a price tag on that once, didn't they?
I think so,
I can't remember what it was.
It was
out of our budget.
It was
anyway.
Way beyond, well, yeah, well beyond my pay grade, certainly. Do you think, as a ginger man, a pasty ginger man, do you think claret and blue suits Alex McLeish more than just the blue of Birmingham City? While we're discussing fashion.
I hadn't really given that a thought, but I think he's a very ambitious guy, McLeish, and I'm sure that he will have a better scope to achieve the things he wants to do at Villa with the better resources, stadium, training ground, etc. So in time, maybe he will find the claret and blue fits him a little better, yeah.
Thanks to James there. Keep safe, will you? And finally now, on to our big interview. Now, as you do, Tom Hopkinson and I were in Barbados at the weekend. We went to Barbados at the
tough
weekend.
Tough assignment.
It was a tough gig, yeah, and we've got to say thank you to the Barbados Tourism Authority and to all the sort of great people we met there, and also to BA. While we were there, we were covering a sort of veterans football tournament, which you'll be reading more about in the People this weekend. We ran into a Chelsea legend, I believe he won the World Cup once, Frank Leboeuf, and he told us about his new career. Here he is. Let him explain to you.
I live in Los Angeles, between Los Angeles and Paris. And in fact, it's my first passion. But I was born and raised in a small village in south of France where you can't find any theater to learn how to act. And my father was a crazy football guy and playing not the highest level, but a good level when he was younger. And so he put my brothers and I in the business, and we loved it. I mean, it was fantastic to play with your friends in a small village. So, and I went to that passion. But I promised to myself that as soon as I would end up playing football, I would go to LA to learn how to act. And I was involved in a play in Paris, and I signed for another play for next January for a tour in France. And I've got a couple of movies coming up to shoot. And I produced a movie in September, last September, a movie I played in too. And we are editing it. So it's a new world for me. It's a real passion. I love it. It's a completely different world, you know, where you don't have a salary wage and you have to put a lot of your money in it and pray that it's going to work, because you want to re-inject the money to produce another movie and a chance to act too. So it's a long process. I use the football a little bit to know people. Like, I play for Hollywood United for fun with Vinnie Jones, Jason Statham.
How were Vinnie Jones's team talks? Because obviously we've seen the video.
Well, it was funny, you know, to know Vinnie in another world, and he's a very nice guy. And I went to see him in the studio playing in an horror movie with Bradley Cooper.
And, oh yeah,
yeah, it was.
That was something.
Big time.
That was something.
Is it you and Vinny at the heart of Hollywood United's defence then?
At the time, yes. No, I think Vinny was playing striker or midfield. You know?
his team, so he could play for everyone.
Yeah. You know, he wanted to be the captain, the top scorer, and the leader of the team.
So when you were a kid in growing up, who were the actors that you admire? What films did you admire? Was it the French films or was it American films?
Well, both. You know, I'm still, but I was really fond of Clint Eastwood.
Right.
You know, the bad, the ugliest, and you know, that's something. You know, I watched like 100 times. Michael J. Fox.
Have you been up to Carmel? Have you made the pilgrimage to Carmel? Where he was mayor, wasn't he?
No.
Beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
Okay. He plays piano there still, doesn't he? Sometimes.
Oh, yeah, 17-mile drive. Really? Yeah, it's Monterey and Carmel, isn't it? Mm. Down there. Mm.
So, and you know, at the time we had only three channels in France, so it was hard to watch, and every movie, American movie or English movie, was doubled, you know, with French voices. But a little bit older, Michael J. Fox, Back to the Future, and Secret of My Success. You know, I love that guy, and I met him. He's such a lovely person. And
still a fantastic actor as well, isn't he?
Yeah. And then, of course, French actors like Belmondo. And Louis de Funès for the comedies.
Philippe Noiret, do you like him?
Who?
Philippe
Noiret, yeah, it's beautiful. But the thing is, for me, those people, they were aliens. You know, like you watch on TV and you say, well, I would love to be in a movie, but I think I don't belong to that world, because those people, they live in Paris first, and I was living in south of France, and you don't know how to reach there, and it seems to be an impossible world.
Impossible dream.
Yeah, like people, they think about football too sometimes, but for me it was, you can play football anywhere, but being behind a camera and tell story to people is beautiful. Mm.
We always used to wind my dad up when I was a youngster, because he always said sport opens doors. So
yeah.
Is that how it's been for you, that it's open?
Well, the thing is, I was saying, because of Hollywood United, I started to meet people.
Yeah.
And he helped me to understand a little bit more about the business, talking to Owen Wilson, Ben Stiller, Woody Harrelson, and Jason Statham, well, some others, Anthony LaPaglia. And we played together, and we became like a family, and so we saw each other, you know, every weekend. That was very nice, and I talked to them. I never said that I was an actor. And it's funny, when I say to Anthony LaPaglia, he said, "Why are you around?" I said, "I'm in Paris." I said, "What the hell are you doing in Paris?" He said, "Well, I'm involved in a play." He said, "You're an actor?" And I was there for 3 years. I said, "Yeah, but you don't want, you know, go there and say, I'm an actor, if you have a room, you know, pick me." I don't want to do that to my friends.
Yeah.
So I do my own business, and we'll see. Yeah.
What kind of roles do you see yourself in, or what kind of roles have you been playing so far?
Well, hopefully, if I'm picked soon, you know, I would love to be in an action movie.
If selected, I like that.
Yeah. But in 10 years from now, you know, I don't know what would be my shape, so maybe I would be a bit more intellectual.
Decent shape.
Yeah. But right now it's more, the last movie was a psychological thriller, mystery movie is what they call it. So any type, you know, it's really what the story is about, and to explore everything before saying, you know, I want to be involved in that movie.
Thanks very much to Frank LeBeouf, to James Nursey, to my studio guest Tom Hopkinson, and thanks to all of you for listening. And we'll be back here next Thursday with another Mirror Football podcast.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Oh, well, of course, it is a different way.
Thank you for downloading this podcast, a Mirror Digital production. The Mirror Football podcast theme music is the cunningly titled Football by the band Peers. That's P-E-E-R-S. Check them out at myspace.com/wearepeers. myspace.com/wearepeers.